Hey, Twisted History listeners, you can find us every Wednesday night on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new Zero Sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today. This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new Zero Sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. All right, so Twisted History. Twisted History this week is the Twisted History of Lewis and Clark. We've been going broad. Oh, so it's me and Vibbs.
Yep.
Me and Vibbs again. St. Anne is in the house. John is on walkabout. Where in the world is Johnny San Diego? Where the fuck is Johnny San Diego? I think he's in Orlando.
I've been hearing reports that he's in the South, somewhere in the South.
He's in the South. He's with the Foreplay guys down South. The reason that John gets pulled away all the time is, unfortunately for us, John is an excellent producer. He's also an excellent cameraman. He's also an excellent editor. So he's in demand. So he gets pulled many different directions. Right now, I think it's Orlando, and he's with Riggsy and the boys. Last I saw, they were interviewing somebody from the LPGA, which means absolutely nothing to me, but he'll be back next week.
Jim Irsay posted a picture last night of him in a cowboy hat with a guitar by a campfire. It looked exactly like Riggsy in like 20 years.
Really?
Yes. Well, Riggsy had the surgery to fix his eye,
right.
But Jim Irsay has not had a surgery to fix his lazy eye. It is a bad lazy eye.
Every now and again, Riggsy's eye goes just a little off course.
It's a little crooked.
I don't think it's perfect.
The muscles in the retina aren't fully there yet.
He said it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Right? But I think he kept the receipt. Anyway, Riggsy's one of my favorite guys, yes. So I'm not shitting on him. I think he's very handsome with or without the eye.
It's fun to shit on Riggsy because he's a billionaire who just plays golf all day. He hit the jackpot.
People who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, there's a guy, Riggs, here, and he's the guy who does the Barstool Classic. He's the guy who does that 20-destination golf tournament that people are lining up, clamoring over themselves to get into. I've been lucky enough to be invited to a couple. Have you ever been to one?
I have.
They're awesome.
Very fun. I actually met Riggsy's dad.
They're very well-run golf tournaments.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all over the country. They do a great job. I don't know why I'm blowing Riggs. Like Vibbs' point, he's making a ton of dough off this, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's where John is. John decided to pick his team, and this week it's the Foreplay guys. But he'll be back next week. And this is the Twisted History of Lewis and Clark. The reason I'm doing the Twisted History of Lewis and Clark is twofold. We've been doing a lot of broad topics lately. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of broad topics where we'll do the Twisted History of Death. Right? Remember we did the Twisted History of Death?
Right.
Like there's no way I can do the Twisted History of Death, the Twisted History of World War II, the Twisted History of holidays even. Like I can't take these broad-ass topics and get them done in an hour and a half. I can't do it.
Yeah.
So like I always say to you guys, and by the way, there'll be a part two. Twisted History Serial Killers is stupid, right? Twisted History Serial Killers part one is better, but I could do a Twisted History of cross-eyed serial killers who kind of look like old Riggs, and I'd be able to bang out an hour and a half. That's how broad it is.
Yeah. You can watch 10 documentaries on Martin Luther King Jr., and you're going to find out different information in each one. You'll have the same bare bones in a couple, but history is just so massive.
But I think that if we do the Twisted History of Lewis and Clark, and I'll go off on tangents, so don't expect this just to be the expedition, obviously. I think by the end of this podcast, I'll have nailed it shut.
Yeah,
I'll tell you right now, everything that I'm going to tell you, this had happened in 1803, let's say, right? So that's over 200 years ago. there are conflicting stories about everything that happened on Lewis and Clark's expedition. I will tell you that Lewis and Clark's expedition was all but forgotten for nearly a century. Like, the journals were never published right away. Like, so this thing happened. It was a big to-do. Everyone kind of got, you know, relatively comfortable from it. Meriwether Lewis wound up getting into severe depression. He may or may not have killed himself. But all this stuff, and then all of a sudden it faded out of memory. It had this resurrection and, you know, people finding mercury and shit and whatnot, which we'll go through. So there are conflicting stories. So if people want to come at me and be like, no, no, this is what happened, this is what happened, I get that. But from what we have done in our research, this is the story of Lewis and Clark. That's the one reason why we're doing it. We're going from, like, a broader topic. We're getting a little bit more granular.
I watched the Ken Burns Lewis and Clark documentary. It's like 18 hours long, but it's phenomenal. It's so good. And
that guy just eats our lunch. Like, he's just so fucking good. Oh, he's the best ever.
He's PBS's cash cow. I mean, he's all they have. Once he's gone, well, now his like daughter's like kind of taking a spot.
Is she?
Yeah. Bitch. But no,
I've never seen a single one of his documentaries. I've never seen Baseball. Was he the one who did the baseball one?
Yes, Large. It's so good. I mean, if you're not a baseball fan.
I am.
I love. Yeah.
I like going to ballpark. I'm not like one of those guys who watch it on TV. Really.
Right. Yeah. Like a purist who's like, oh, his ERA is really low.
Right.
Yeah. No, it. I've even watched like jazz and country music, and I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of either, but they were very interesting. You know, like seeing those names and seeing how it all started. But to go back to what you were saying with it's such a broad thing.
Right.
Whenever we did the Twisted History of Evangelicals, is that my saying that right?
Evangelists.
With Jim Baker and Tammy Faye, I didn't really understand all the moving parts with it.
Right.
Another thing we talked about was, what's something you like that other people don't like?
Yes.
This podcast has got me obsessed with biopics. I love watching historic biopics now.
You like
and
that
seeing
now.
Seeing if So I watched Through the Eyes of Tammy Faye.
I heard she did an amazing job.
Is it Julie Chastain? Is that her
name?
Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain played Tammy Faye Baker.
She's unbelievable. That's why when you said twisted, like when you were talking about, you know, when you said broads before, I thought you actually meant like Betty White, Franca Viola, all these different women.
Right. Oh yeah.
It was very good to watch. Andrew Garfield plays Jim Baker.
Right.
And he's another great actor. He's phenomenal.
He did a good job. He was a little too like weird and goofy. So I found out Kevin Spacey played Fall from Grace. Kevin Spacey played Jim Baker back in the day. He did a perfect job because he's just a creepy psycho.
Yeah.
Pretty spot on. But it's great. Through the Eyes of Tammy Faye, it got like a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'd watch it.
Got shit on.
Yeah, if you want to, I think the acting was good, but they didn't really care for the script. But if you want to have like an extra something to go with the Evangelist podcast that we watched Through the Eyes of Tammy Faye. It's
we touched on so many of them in that thing too.
Yes,
we did a bandolier strap of just like
that was one of our
taking
first
them
ones.
Out and shitting on somebody. And but the Tammy Faye Baker one, Jim Baker, Tammy Faye Baker, like right up until modern day where they sell disaster preparation kits.
Bunkers.
They sell
bunker.
Those. Yeah. They sell that fucking, the 5 gallon tubs.
And if you get on Google and look for GIFs, I blogged about this. I was looking for GIFs. There's just, there's Jim Baker just like hugging tubs of survival, like goop.
And he has like this silver nitrate stuff, which cures COVID and AIDS. And he sells it. It's unbelievable. It's like $60. You could never have AIDS and never have COVID. And I didn't know that. Like, and I pay attention. I'm one of those guys that watches the news. Mm-hmm. And the news really hasn't caught on yet that Jim Baker has the cure to both AIDS and COVID in his fucking possession, which is fantastic. You can't put a price on that.
I mean, when you've got
thank you, Jim.
When you've got a direct line to God, you're going to get some, you're going to get a little, you're going to get privy to information.
You're the biopic guy.
Yeah.
It's funny, too, because, like, I see, you know, like, when we pick people to sort of jump in every now and again. Chief does it a lot from Chicago. Mm-hmm. Eddie does it every now and again from Chicago. I know Carl wants to do it. I don't speak to White Sox Dave as much as the other three fellas. Probably speak to Chief the most, and I did a couple trips with Carl. I love them all. But I think Chief is a huge documentary guy.
Huge.
Oh, Dante, too, by the way.
Yeah.
All the Chicago guys, like the biopics are something different, right? Mm-hmm. The documentary ones, these guys fucking tear them up,
love
you know? Them. So... anywho, so there's all these things going on. I don't watch them. It was the same thing. Like, when I was blogging heavy for Take a Report, people would be like, well, what other blogs do you read? And I'm like, I would never read blogs because if I saw something great, I can't help but steal it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's not like all I do on this podcast, all we do on this podcast, rather, is steal stuff because it's history. Mm. And I just never, I don't know, I very rarely watch documentaries or biopics. I should get back into it.
You watched the Al Capone biopic, correct? And you said it was like the worst biopic of all time.
So the movie, yeah, the movie with Tom Hardy. Oof. That was disgraceful.
I'm still working up the courage to watch that to see if I will hate it as much as you did.
Oh, my God.
It was awful.
Okay, all right.
And she's a huge Tom Hardy fan.
Yeah,
you couldn't even watch that with the sound off. Like,
yeah.
Just,
right.
There's, yeah. There's some biopics you just... even if they're bad, I still watch them. I'm trying to think what pretty bad... Like W, that kind of sucked. But yeah. I sat through the whole thing. And
Right. John just saw the one with... John's probably going to cut all this, by the way. John just saw the one with the Williams sisters, and he loved it.
That was great.
Yeah, he loved that shit. So we'll do all that stuff. Yeah. But getting back to the podcast, why not? Another thing. One of our listeners had reached out. He was like, Large, we all know how I killed Betty White. He's like, and then when you did the Twisted History of Dogs, you almost killed your dog, right? Like,
because
Blue Cheese almost died.
Yeah.
Wound up paying $5,000 after she ate 5 Advil. To get her back on the road to recovery after I did the Twisted History of Dogs. My dog almost died. He's like, so even though you killed Betty White, I thought that you got off easy with $5,000 and that you almost killed your dog. He's like, until I listened to the podcast the same day that my dog died. He's like, so you killed Betty White and you wound up killing my dog. So I don't even know now what my power is. So I'm going to go Lewis and Clark this week because... I guess if you're a descendant of Lewis and Clark, maybe watch your ass. But next week, I'm going to try and be a little more targeted. Maybe we'll do like OJ or Woody Allen or just Lane Maxwell or something like that. We'll start to target people to die. But, you know, thoughts and prayers to this gentleman. And he sent me a picture of the dog, cutest fucking thing in the world. So condolences, thoughts and prayers. I don't know the power of this podcast. We've talked about Lewis and Clark before. We've had to have talked about Lewis and Clark before because we've done a lot about American history. Although that turn of the century... For the 19th century, when we went from the 1700s to the 1800s, we don't spend a lot of time in. Vibs and I float around history, but we always kind of wind up into a part where we're like, oh, by the way, wasn't that Prohibition? Like, we always kind of wind up in the early 1900s.
Yeah,
we do. It just happens to be like, oh, wasn't that the start of World War One? And, of course, there's so much shit that happened. You know, we did that with Betty White. Like, we saw what had happened since she was born in 1922. January 17th, 1922, Betty White was born. Since 1922 on, there was so much sexy shit. There's a lot to talk about. Spanish flu, and Great Depression, crash of the stock market, World War II, World War I, Vietnam, Korean War, Cuban Missile Crisis, like all that stuff, that we don't really go back and spend that much time at the turn of the century for when the clock ticked from 1799 to 1800. That all changes today. That's where we're going to hang out. Yeah. We're going to hang out in that part of American history.
I feel like we've got the Revolutionary War, and then once it's kind of over, we're like, ah, we did it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, and there is a gap. There really is a gap. But I will tell you, in 1800, if you're looking to take the pulse of being an American citizen, it's still not cool to be black. It's not cool to be black back then. Mm-hmm. Still, it's not good. But there was also, you know, you got to figure out that, you know, once the 13 colonies were established and then we started to break out and statehood and whatnot, there was a whole country just ready to be explored and possibly conquered. But the group of Americans that were here on this side of the pond were Europeans. And outside of a couple of distinct Europeans like Hitler, a lot of people were just comfortable where they were. Like, Spain has definitive borders. And for the most part, most Spaniards are like, why don't we own France too? Or why don't we own Germany? Like, for the most part, people don't mind having borders or sharing a continent with somebody. So the idea of the manifest destiny where we had to go from coast to coast, people didn't necessarily buy into, which you would think would be strange because we're America. We needed to touch the Atlantic and walk right through the Pacific. That wasn't the case for people in the 1800s who had a European thought process where they could be in Ireland and be... No, they could be in England and not necessarily have to own Scotland. It's a terrible example because England wanted to own the whole fucking planet.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, Finland didn't need to cross over borders. Mm-hmm. Germany did, right? Like, Russia stopped. India stopped. China stopped. Like, they all... Like, imagine somebody owned Manifest Destiny in Europe and own the tip of France all the way to the tip of China. That'd be ridiculous. But that's what happened with our continent, obviously. But I wanted to get you in the mindset that that wasn't the case back then. All right? So we talked about them before, and then I just spoke about how he did the Twisted History of Dogs either last week. This guy, Mike Lane, wrote in, a loyal listener, and he had said, listen, I just want you to know when you did the Twisted History of Dogs, you didn't mention Lewis and Clark. And Lewis and Clark on that expedition, that famous expedition, it said that they ate over 200 dogs.
Yeah.
That's an important thing for me to know. I didn't know that. And then he said he didn't tell me, but once I started doing some research, it wind up, and this is the critical point. These guys ate a lot of stuff that they're not proud of on that trip. They ate over 200 dogs, but they never ate semen. And I'll get to the bottom of that by the end of the thing. But let's go back. Let's talk about Lewis and Clark. The Lewis and Clark expedition lasted from August 31st, 1803, end of summer, 1803, to September 25th, 1806, right? Beginning of fall, 1806. So it was a solid 3 years. The guys who went on that were also referred to as the Corps of Discovery Expedition. So the Lewis and Clark Expedition was also called the Corps of Discovery Expedition. And their mission was to cross the newly acquired western portion of the country right after the Louisiana Purchase. These guys took off in 1803, and you're about to know that the Louisiana Purchase took off, was finalized right before that. I've touched upon this before, but I'm going to tell you again. The Louisiana Purchase, by the way, I spoke to an old friend of mine yesterday, Scott McCarthy. Scott, I went to college with him. I love Scotty more than anything. He lives out in L.A., and since I'm going out for the race, mm-hmm. by the way, I'm going out for Clash Coliseum. This is going to be for sale in the Barstool store. For people who are watching this on YouTube, I got this hot-ass Barstool racing thing. I mean, that's kind of cool, no? I designed this myself.
Little Hot Wheels logo?
Looks a little bit like the Hot Wheels logo. Not exactly, not though, for people same. Who are wondering. But anyway, that's going up
a couple differences. Enough of a difference.
Little nuances. But so I spoke to him, and he was telling me how his kids, by the way, his one kid is about to play football at like WashU. His other kid's playing lacrosse up in Colby. The other kid's like a freshman in high school. Everyone's getting so goddamn old. But so him and his kids listen to this. So it's a pretty good shout out for him. And I said, I'm going to do Lewis and Clark this week, and I'm going to do the Louisiana Purchase. And Scott had said, Louisiana Purchase was the greatest real estate deal in the history of the United States. That's what he just said to me. I've never put it that way. It is the greatest real estate deal that ever happened in the history of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even fucking close, right? So I'm going to go through it, okay? The Louisiana Territory, not Louisiana, assholes, the Louisiana Territory had many owners, and it was so fucking big that parts of it were simply just a jump ball for whoever wanted to stake a claim there. First, it was owned by the indigenous people, obviously. Everything was owned by the indigenous people, and they got the fucking shaft. I apologize. Then the French came in around 1682, way back, 1682. And then the land actually changed hands from France to Spain for just under 40 years. In between the Treaty of Fontainebleau, by the way, I'm going to do a lot of Frenches. I'm going to nail it. Fontainebleau in 1762 until Spain relinquished the Louisiana territory and New Orleans back to Napoleon's France via the Treaty of San Ildefonso. That was in 1800. So outside of a 40-year gap between the indigenous people having it and the United States having it, it was basically owned by France. And when we wanted to have it, the person who was in control of it was Napoleon. Napoleon obviously wasn't a king, but he was a big time general. So Indians, French, Spain, French again, and now the French under Napoleon, right?
Yep.
Along comes Thomas Jefferson. Ever heard of him? Thomas Jefferson was the president of the United States at the time, and his secretary of state was a guy named James Madison. They decided to fashion an alliance with the French government. Part and parcel of this relationship was the future governance of the Louisiana Territory. We had almost an unspoken agreement that we were able to use like waterways and whatnot that typically or that technically were contained within the Louisiana Territory. Thomas Jefferson saw that those things were so tenuous, particularly with all the wars that were going on between the French and the English and stuff, that he needed to shore up this territory in order for us to grow as a country. Not everybody was on board with it, but that's why he had then gone to try and purchase the Louisiana Territory. Eventually, they negotiated the Louisiana Purchase in 1803, a deal that included a huge 828,000. I'm going to say that again. 828,000 square miles. That's big. Almost a million square miles of territory that includes New Orleans and nearly the whole Mississippi River Valley. And they did it for $15 million. That's $18 per square mile. We did the math on that. About $18 per square mile. 828,000 square miles. Large, you could have said a billion square miles. You could have said a trillion. You could have said 200,000. I don't understand how big that is, right? By the way, that $15 million was actually only $11.25 million plus the forgiveness of $3.75 million in French debt. But I'm going to stay with $15 million just to keep things straight, right? Mm-hmm. So the Louisiana Purchase bought us not only what we know as the state of Louisiana, but what was the Louisiana Territory. Louisiana, the state, is bullshit. The whole state is fucking, I love the state. I love the people in it. I love saying New Orleans correctly now. The whole state is bullshit. It's only about 53,000 square miles. It's the 19th smallest state by area and the 25th most populous of the 50 states. So it's right in the middle. It's not Texas. It's not California. It's not some fucking mammoth state. It kind of is just mediocre.
It's a boot.
It's Louisiana. Boot. It's Louisiana. I mean, it's not Delaware either. It's not Rhode Island, yeah. But it's nothing special. So we didn't pay $15 million for Louisiana because and their mediocre 53,000 square miles. We bought 828,000 square miles. That land stretches from the Delta Northwest all the way to fucking Canada. So we're going manifest destiny from the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border now. Okay? So Louisiana, all of it. We got a little bit of Texas, a little bit of New Mexico, a little bit of Minnesota, a little bit of Colorado, most of North Dakota, most of Wyoming, most of Montana, all of Missouri, all of Arkansas, all of Kansas, all of Nebraska, all of South Dakota, and all of Iowa. That's unbelievable. If you were to go out in the street and say to somebody, hey, have you ever been to Louisiana Territory? I'm saying that 75% of people would say no because they think that they would mean the state where New Orleans is. Have you ever been to Louisiana?
I have.
You've been to Louisiana?
Right.
I thought your name would be. Would you have been to Louisiana?
Would what?
Have you ever been to Louisiana?
Yes. We just did the Twisted Twisted.
Oh, yeah. We were down there together. Shit. That's right. That was you.
That
was girlfriend.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. I think most people who haven't been to Louisiana definitely have been to Louisiana Territory, right? Because mm-hmm. it's the whole middle of the United States.
Absolutely. I just don't think they know that that's the Louisiana Territory.
So,
yeah.
We had the 13 original colonies. This is technically 14 colonies.
If right,
you include
right.
parts of yes. states as a whole.
So it's four, huge.
We had 14. So we just mm-hmm. doubled, more than doubled our size.
But am I crazy? Am I putting too fine a point on this? Did you graduate grammar school thinking that the Louisiana Purchased Louisiana? I did.
No.
I did. No. I did. I mean,
I don't think
maybe
the
I'm
teachers
an asshole.
Know.
Okay.
I think it's like just, it's kind of like how many kids think that Alaska is southwest
of
Texas.
That was
that's,
stunning.
I asked
my kids.
Next level stupid.
I asked my kids how many of their friends like their friends, and I will tell you how it is unbelievable. Not my kids. My mm-hmm. kids know. It's unbelievable how many kids think that Alaska is next to Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
That's the way it's put into a map. Right?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
cut it out and put it next
100%,
to Hawaii.
100%.
Yeah. So
another thing that teachers just overlook. They don't. They just assume right. they're going to know, and the
yeah,
kids
yeah.
don't.
But I get a kid mistaking the Louisiana Purchase.
Yeah, 100%.
Louisiana. But
right.
but if
they listen to this now,
yeah, yeah.
they won't make that mistake. And now $15 million for all that. That's a deal. Wasn't a deal then. It almost bankrupted us.
It's a steal, yeah.
Yeah, well, it almost bankrupted us. We took out so much dough on it, so we had to borrow. We had to borrow money to get this thing done. I have it somewhere. I have it somewhere about the purchase. We had to borrow money to get this done, and we were paying it back for years. And by the time we paid it back, that $15 million had turned to $23 million. But still, an absolute you know, deal, right?
Right.
$23 million. You can, I can't buy a mansion in the Hamptons for that.
And at the time, right. And at the time, I don't think they under. At the time, I know they didn't understand how big this was.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, people were making fun of Thomas Jefferson for spending all this money on all this land. Like, what they the fuck are we doing?
And again, it wasn't that Manifest Destiny type thing. They were like, no, there can be a border. There can be a border where somebody else owns land on the other side of it. As the United States, as the, you know, the first country we're growing, we don't need to own this thing. We don't need to go see the shining sea. Mm-hmm. And as a result, like, James Madison went into the poorhouse. He, like, had to sell his silverware. Honest to God, like, this thing bankrupted a lot of people. But thank God that it happened. And by the way, Napoleon, his two brothers had tried to talk sense in him. Like, Napoleon's two brothers were like, are you fucking kidding me? Do not do this. This is a terrible deal. One of the brothers who had confronted him face to face while Napoleon was taking a bath, Napoleon splashed him. That was the story. His brother's like, don't do this, fucking Napoleon. He said, get the fuck out of here. Splashed him. Brother's like, fine, do it. You know, like, and he walked down, slammed the door. Go ahead, sell off most of the United States. Yeah, yeah. So that happened. So again, so if you're going to take away the Louisiana Purchases, note it had nothing to do with Louisiana. It had something to do with the Louisiana Territory, which was massive, which was vast, and which the French had originally claimed for a gentleman named King Louis the 14th, King Louis XIV, and King Louis is Louisiana. That's the whole thing. So that whole territory is about King Louis. I am going to go on a left turn.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
When I started doing this podcast with you, Vibs, I like to go on left turns about individuals. I'm going on a left turn about King Louis. It doesn't have anything to do with Lewis nor Clark. I don't care. Yeah. Louis the Quatorze was fucking fascinating.
Is this the Sun King?
He's the Sun King.
We got this question right on trivia one
time. We did.
Time.
We absolutely
yep,
did.
We crushed that.
Yeah. King Louis the 13th, Louis Trez. He's the guy that the cognac's named after.
Right.
There's like a $3,000 bottle of cognac that's made by Remy Martin. I've had it. Sometimes it's more than $3,000. It's that iconic bottle with the spikes on it. And so they have all these different cask ages of it and all that kind of shit. So I had one. A buddy of mine owns a restaurant, Mario D'Arturo, shout out. He had had it in the thing. He'd poured us small glasses. It was myself, Willie, I think Francis was there and stuff, so we tried it, Louis Trez, and I never had it before. It's just like a high-end cognac. I don't have the palate to appreciate it, but I've had it. That was Louis XIV's father, so Louis Trez to Louis XIV. So Louis XIV, Louis the 14th, he's also known as Louis the Great, Louis Le Grand. What's up? He's also known as the Sun King, Louis Soleil. What's up? No? Nothing for that?
So hot.
He was the King of France from May 1643, when he was just 4 years old, until his death in 1715 at the age of 76, which means he was the monarch of France for 72 years and 110 days. And that's the longest recorded of any monarch of a sovereign country in history. So he was given the crown when his dad died when he was only 4 years old. And he kept it until he died 76. He was in charge 72 years.
That's a little fact.
Yeah. Queen Elizabeth is close on his heels, right?
How long has she been in there?
So at the time of taping, today is January 19th, 2022. Mm-hmm. That old bitch is just shy of 70 years in office. She's right on his fucking heels.
She's ripe.
Right on his heels. And she's... And so 70 years in office for Queen Elizabeth. So keep in mind, 72 for Louis XIV, 70 years for Queen Elizabeth. That's making her easily the longest reigning incumbent monarch. The only guy who's in office, guy or girl who's in office right now, the longest reigning incumbent is her with a bullet at 70 years. And also by far the longest reigning documented female monarch in history. She's the balls as far as fucking... She's the Cal Ripken of female monarchs, except Cal Ripken actually worked, right? She's just the world's highest paid mascot, right? Golden diapers. Fuck her.
If you, this is a left turn.
Go ahead.
On our Christmas tree, we have two ornaments. It is Cal Ripken Jr. and Grant Hill. In the year 1997, my dad wanted my brother and I to be those two guys.
Like, really?
Just put those guys together, and that's what he wanted us to be. We played basketball, we played baseball. So, yeah, the Iron Man King, 100%. Cal Ripken, is very high up on the list.
I met Grant Hill when he was at Duke. And I was in college at the same time. That's when I met him first. And the shoulders on that guy, like, you couldn't understand it when you used to watch him, you know, on TV. But he was, you know, it's like seeing Peyton Manning in person. He's a fucking monster.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Hill was, like, sculpted, particularly in college. And then he got his, like, NBA body, got even stronger. But, so, Queen Elizabeth is in office for 70 years, hot on the trail of Louis the 14th. But they need to keep her 95-year-old ass propped up on the throne for another 2.5 years to beat him. And that's how the only way she'd beat Louis the 14th. I'm hoping to be doing this podcast for the next 2 years. I'm hoping to be doing the podcast for the next 2 years.
With 3G. That's
taking the under.
Oh.
I don't think she beats him.
If Do she you th- dies I'm going around between the room this right- episode and next week.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm going to look you the shit out of her. I think her and her whole family are pieces of shit. I have no fucking... I do not care.
But
honestly.
Because
I do
she's
not
such
care.
A piece of shit, do you think she's immune to these curses? Like,
100%.
I don't think she can die. I think she's...
Believe me, there has been nations that have been wishing for her to bite
it. She's bulletproof. Nothing's going to happen to her.
I take the under on her beating Louis the 14th. How about you, Annie?
Oh, I don't know.
Does she beat him or no? It's going to be documented.
I didn't think so until you brought her up now and you got this curse.
You're
thing
saying
going.
No. Vibs?
I think she is one of those old people that is just hanging on. This is the one thing that she has, and she will not stop fighting until she has surpassed
Understood.
The Sun King.
Well, I don't think she's ever really thought about it.
Ask
we
John
should ask
too.
Her. Put it out there.
Okay.
Because I don't think she's thought about it in these terms. So maybe once she knows that what she's up against, she might, you know, she might be a little stronger than Betty White.
She knows. She has.
We're huge in England. We are. I don't know if you guys know this, but we're huge and growing in England.
I mean, so the British have the French on their radar all the time, 100%. I feel like. They hate each other, right? They've always been button heads.
They hate the French. They love twisted history.
Yes.
Give her the opportunity to take out somebody in France. You know what? We might have a shot.
I said Louis was only 4 when he became king because the 13th died at the age of 41 in 1643. So the monarchy passed to his eldest child, Louis the 14th, who was just 4 years and 8 months old and had to rule over a kingdom that had 19 million subjects. That's substantial. You're 4 years old. You know, the crown doesn't fit you. It's kind of adorable to think about. So he's 19 million subjects. So his mother and his godfather slash chief minister, a guy by the name of Cardinal Jules Mazarin, did most of the heavy lifting while Louis was a child. I don't think he was officially coronated, where they would put the crown on him and all that stuff, until he was closer to 21. Mm-hmm. So he was 4, technically he was king since he was 4, and but this guy, the cardinal, and his mom were kind of in charge. The rest I'm going to do is bullets, and the bullets are pretty interesting. So after it took nearly two decades before they could birth a child, Louis's parents christened him Louis Douadon, meaning gift of God. So his parents called him a gift of God because it took 20 years to have him. And both his mother and the chief minister, this guy Mazarin. I'm going to say his name is going to be Mazarin or Mazarin. I'm going to say Mazarin. Fuck it.
Yep.
Instilled in him the impression that kings are divinely chosen. As a result, Louis the 14th adopted the sun as his emblem, associating himself with the Greek and Roman sun god Apollo. And like the planets revolve around the sun, which we all know, Louis the 14th believed that France revolved around him. So no shortage of confidence in Louis the 14th. His first wife was also his second cousin. I love saying shit like that. Marie Therese of Spain. Marie Therese gave birth to 6 of the king's children, but only one, Louis Jr., survived past the age of 5. Louis the 14th, however, fathered more than a dozen illegitimate children outside of his marriage with a number of different mistresses. Mistress Louise de Lavalier, again, fucking pured that, bore 5 of the king's children, only 2 of which survived infancy, while her rival, Madame de Montespan, who eventually became the king's chief mistress, gave birth to 7 of the monarch's children. And Louis eventually legitimized most of his children born to mistresses in the years following their births. He legitimized them, but they never were giving any kind of step towards the throne, right? You're my kid, but you're not my heir.
Bastard
didn't have to
children.
Do it. Yeah. Yeah, they were Jon Snow's.
Yeah.
They were Jon Snow's. So, and he had a bunch of them, but he did have one kid with his wife, and his kid's name was Louis.
Also, what a title. Oh, King's yeah. Chief Mistress.
Oof,
love that.
That'd be nice. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You are. You're my chief mistress. After something called the Fronde, which was a series of civil wars within France. This isn't the French Revolution. That's going to come along much later. But after the Fronde, which was just a series of civil wars, Louis XIV officially moved his court from Paris to a former hunting lodge that he had transformed into a lavish 700-room palace that we now know as Versailles, which is about 13 miles outside of the city. So every tradesman, if you worked with marble, if you worked with wood, if you worked with paint, if you worked with anything, you were brought 13 miles outside of Paris for nearly 20 years, and you built the Palace of Versailles for Louis XIV because he no longer liked Paris. He was in Paris when the shit got weird, so he wanted to get the fuck out. And from 1671 until his death in 1715, Louis never slept a night in Paris again. Right? That's a guy who knows what he wants, and he got the hell out of Dodge.
That's probably why he lasted so long.
29, 39, 43 years, right? Because it took a while to build his palace. 43 years, Louis XIV, Louis XIV, never slept a night in Paris. Versailles is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, Versailles is as beautiful as a place that you'd ever want to go to. Annie has been there, and it's stunningly beautiful. And let's put people in the right head. Like, we're trying to tell you we're not, you know, in the Depression or during Prohibition. Late 1700s, France was a good time to be part of the aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the powdered wigs and the girls in the bustiers pushing them up, you know what I mean? And the big dresses and whatnot. And Marie Antoinette
yes.
had not even come along yet. Mm-hmm. Marie Antoinette would be after Louis XIV.
Yeah.
And then it didn't wind up well for her. But, like, so this is pre-revolution. If you were in the aristocracy in France, that's what I want.
It's a sweet spot. Yeah.
If you're on a good side. If you were a peasant in France around that time, believe me, it wasn't cool. You always had, like, a wart. You always award, like,
right.
You have a lot of brown clothes. Yeah. But, I mean, the parties at Versailles were nuts. People were dressed to the nines. The dresses and corsets worn by women in the court of Louis XIV were so cumbersome and difficult to get out of because they had those, like, whalebone corsets and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And those big – it reminds me of that scene in Bridesmaids. So these girls were in these, like – big, beautiful dresses at these parties in this gigantic place, Versailles, that all of a sudden, if nature called, they would basically go down an abandoned hallway. Beautiful abandoned hallway. Still marble and Michelangelo pissing vodka in or whatever the hell it was. And they would just take shits in the corner. Like, they would just take their underwear off, take shits in the corner, and just leave them there.
I don't know if they necessarily wore any.
Yeah, so perhaps they didn't have any bloomers.
Did they have, like, an assistant in the bathroom?
I don't know.
Hey.
Like, I think it would just be one of those things where you go, you let it go. So it's documented that the night after parties in Versailles, the people who were the servants there would have to go around to various hallways, just clean up piles of human excrement.
Disgusting.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. That, I would love
you know,
to
you
be
say
like,
disgusting. Common practice, though.
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do? Yeah.
You know, like,
I mean, but you know those big, poofy ball gowns were getting doo-doo on him.
Yeah, you had
to. I mean, you can't.
Although, I don't know.
It's hard to control it.
I don't know. You know what? I don't know either, but I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that the top of French society was taking shits in marble fucking hallways while Louis was next door, like, kind of giggling like the Amadeus. So, Louis, if you ever see any of the paintings that he commissioned about himself, and there are plenty. So, not paintings that weren't him, but paintings of Louis the 14th. One of the things that he loved about himself was his legs. So he'd always have his legs in, like, white stockings with the buckled shoes with the big heels. And he always has his legs sticking out. If you Google paintings of Louis XIV, he has his legs sticking out. Beautiful legs.
Yeah.
But otherwise, he was one of those guys that would, like, right? Look at the gaps on him,
he's
right?
He's a tall drink of water.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was one of those guys that would sit at tables. And the kitchen to his dining room was a quarter mile away. So, like, his food was, like, brought out in a procession, a quarter-mile procession. I like the feeling of that. I like the feeling of what France was like for rich people around that time. He also owned the Hope Diamond.
He was, sorry.
Go ahead.
He was 6'4". He was a tall drink of water.
That's what they say. He was 6'4", but they weren't sure it was because of his heels.
Yeah.
That's what they say. His heels and his wig.
That's like an NBA roster.
Yes, exactly.
Height. It's like, yeah. He's more like 6 feet tall.
Right, right. Because I'm 6'5", and I know I'm majestic.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm all, that's barefoot, baby. Barefoot and no wigs. You know me. I'm as clean as the day I was born. So so I don't know. I put an asterisk next to the 6'4 thing. So he owned the Hope Diamond. Mm-hmm. What's the Hope Diamond? If you ever saw Titanic, that's what they thought the Hope Diamond was. The Hope Diamond was never on the Titanic. That's all bullshit. But the Hope Diamond has been around for a very long time. It was called French Blue back when Louis Couture had it. And when he had it, it weighed over 67 carats. That's a lot. For anyone who's ever bought an engagement ring or a wedding ring, you know what 67 carats is. No, you don't. Right? Get a carat and a half for your wife, and all of a sudden it's 2 months. Like that whole thing. 67 carats is a whopper when Louis had it. But it's been cut down by its various owners to what it's now 45 and a half carats. And it's in the Smithsonian in Washington. It was never on the Titanic. It was the Hope Diamond. They say it was cursed, right? Because I believe it was lost during the French Revolution. Marie Antoinette might have had it when they cut her head off. I don't know. But the Hope Diamond used to belong to Louis XIV. He died at 77. Right, he died at 77 on August 13th, 1715, a few weeks after complaining about a pain in one of his beautiful legs. He became seriously overweight in his old age, and his left leg turned gangrenous. Oh. So that's how he had died. Gangrene's not a good way to die, and that's how he had died. His corpse was divided into three parts, his body, his heart, and his entrails, which was a tradition for French kings that started several centuries earlier. They didn't just bury you. They buried you. They entombed your body, and then they split up your heart and your entrails, and they kept them elsewhere, normally in certain churches and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they did the same thing for him. His body was buried. His heart and his entrails were somewhere else. Louis's heart was embalmed and placed in Église des Jésuites en rue Saint-Antoine in Paris. Nailing all these things. So that's where his heart was. However, during the French Revolution, the Sun King's heart was stolen. And it ended up in the possession of someone named Lord Harcourt, the Archbishop of York, which is kind of cool. And Lord Harcourt, the Archbishop of York, had a dinner party where he invited a gentleman named William Buckland, this Englishman named William Buckland, over. So he visited Harcourt in 1848, and he learned that the Archbishop had the mummified heart of the Sun King. He said, "Can I see it?" He saw it, he took it, and he ate it. He just gulped it down. And I'll explain that. Buckland was a freak. He was a geologist. He was a paleontologist. He was a zoologist. But he was known as a man who wanted to eat everything. Buckland's favorite snack was something called mice on toast. It's kind of self-explanatory. He also ate porpoise. He ate panther. He ate dog. He ate sea slugs. He ate kangaroo. And he ate moles. His ultimate goal was to taste every animal on earth. And I get it, right? I get it. And it's not apples to apples, but like I drank the cognac of Louis XIII, like, you know, because I wanted a connection. No biggie.
Yeah.
Very expensive, but, you know, like, so the whole thing. So Buckland tasted the limestone wall of an Italian cathedral just to disprove the legend that it was imbued with the blood of saints. They said that this limestone wall used to get damp from the blood of saints. So this guy said, no, I'll go. Buckland went over there, started licking the wall, and his culinary expertise concluded that it wasn't saint's blood, but it was bat urine instead.
Ah,
yeah, bat piss.
That's how COVID started.
So then when this weirdo was at a dinner party, the mummified heart of a legendary French king was put in front of it. He popped it like a McNugget. The mummified heart had shrank to about the size of a walnut by the time Buckland got to see it. It was 1848, so that was over 130 years this thing was just shriveling.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, so, I mean, to have it down probably wasn't his whole heart. So to have it go down to a mummified walnut, like the toe that we spoke about.
Right.
Up in the Yukon.
The drink.
Yeah, you got to do it toes. You got to tup the toe. Yeah. So this guy popped it, and that was it. So Louis XIV, one of the most, I'll say it, iconic kings ever of France, died 130 years later. His heart was eaten by an eccentric British dude. Like, I don't know. After Louis's death, just to keep that theme going, I think he had already, like his, he had already survived his kids. So the throne went to his great grandson, who was then crowned Louis the 15th, and his great grandson was only 5 when he took over the throne. So Louis came in when he was 4. His great grandson took over for him when he was 5, and Louis the 15th had went on to govern France for the next 59 years. So that's a nice run.
Mm-hmm.
From the 13th through the 15th, and then after the 15th, we're going to get into the French Revolution, which I'm done. I'm done with Louis the 14th right now. You get into the French, and things start to get hairy. But the Louis had a nice little run in
was
there.
Was it like 120 years for the two of them?
Yeah, the hell not, right?
Well, I wonder if it's better to be a king when you're 4 years old, or if it's better to come into being a king when you're 30.
Yeah, because you don't know what you have. You're saying.
Yeah, because if you're 4,
you've never had a callus.
All you know is being a king.
Yeah,
and if you're like 30, you're like, okay, well, you know, a different life. I don't know.
I
don't think there's an answer to that.
Well, no, I mean there is, right? If you go to Coming to America, that gives you the answer.
Yes,
right? Like Eddie Murphy.
Did you watch the second one? I haven't seen the second one.
I heard it was absolutely
okay.
Garbage.
Yeah, I haven't gotten the courage to watch.
I
the
will
second
not
one.
Do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? All right, so. That was a little bit of a tangent. I apologize. I don't apologize. But that's Louis XIV. Everyone should know about him. He's very, very fascinating. Okay? The reason I mentioned Louis XIV is because Louisiana was named after him. And the way that I was yelling about it, apparent Louisiana territory is near and dear to my heart. Back to the purchase. So now we're in America. Thomas Jefferson is president. We have all this fucking land, but we have no idea what's inside of it or how to get across it. By the way, when Jefferson thought that these guys, before he did Lewis and Clark expedition, he thought that there were woolly mammoths still in the United States. He thought they were going to run into woolly mammoths. It was crazy. You had no idea. So now you buy all this land, this amorphous boundary that's mainly rivers. Like, so the rivers were the boundaries. A lot of this was done by canoe.
You're right.
Well, so you thought they were going to run into woolly mammoths.
I mean, they might as well have been sending these guys to the moon.
Yeah.
They were gone for 100%. 3 years, and there was no contact with, like, Washington, D.C. or Jefferson. They could have been dead, and they would never know.
There was no Morse code. There was no telephone, mail, smoke signal, or anything. So when these guys were gone, you just waited.
Mm-hmm.
You just waited.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, it's not like they went to the West Coast, saw the Pacific, and lit off a flare to let everyone know that they made it. They then had to turn around and come home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
So
that's what I'm trying to say, too. Like, we talk about studs and we talk about explorers, and people mention Lewis and Clark. This was huge. This was a huge thing. So we have all this idea. We have all this land. No idea. So Jefferson taps two guys to explore and to map the newly acquired territory, to find a practical route across the western half of the continent, and to establish an American presence in this territory before European powers attempted to establish claims in this region, particularly the Spanish, who were coming up from Mexico.
Right.
So we were looking to beat the Spanish.
So we're trying to beat the Spanish. So Thomas Jefferson has to pick the cream of the crop.
You would think.
Right?
You would absolutely think. There was also a secondary objective, and that was more scientific. They had to study plants and animal species, which I was like, that's kind of adorable. But if you Google... Lewis and Clark expedition, what happened? It all depends on what you click on. They will say, Lewis and Clark expedition is how we know about the three-toed sloth. How we know. They did a lot of that stuff. So Lewis's journals describe 178 previously unknown species of plants. So he documented nearly 200 new plants. That's so uninteresting to me. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'd give a shit less about that, but he had to do it. And 122 new animals, including coyotes. No one ever saw a fucking coyote. Mountain beavers, which I think sounds fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And grizzly bears. Imagine seeing a grizzly bear for the first fucking time.
Terrifying.
It's like the Mexicans when he came on ships and they thought they were floating islands. What the fuck do you do when you see a grizzly bear? You know what I mean? It's like the first guy who ate an oyster. Could be the bravest guy I've ever heard of. You do me a favor, sweetheart, and close that window. I'm freezing my balls off. I apologize.
I got it.
So who's he going to send? That's what Vib says. He's going to do the cream of the crop. Kind of. In 1795, there was a 21-year-old guy. His name is Meriwether Lewis. And he was court-martialed because he got drunk and he challenged a lieutenant to a duel. A little bit of a beer muscle guy.
Yeah.
I don't judge. He was found not guilty of the charges, but his superiors decided to transfer him to a different rifle company to avoid any future incidents. And his new commander turned out to be none other than a guy named William Clark. So Meriwether Lewis got drunk, challenged his superior to a duel, wound up getting thrown in prison for it. found not guilty, transferred, and he got transferred under the rule of a guy named Clark, Lewis and Clark.
I like Meriwether Lewis. You got to have someone with a little bit of edge to
like
send out there.
A little moxie.
Yeah, you're sending them into the wilderness.
100%.
He's got to be a man.
In 1801, Lewis left the army, and he accepted an invitation to serve as Thomas Jefferson's presidential secretary. It winds up that Meriwether Lewis knew Thomas Jefferson since he was a boy. He'd grown up on a Virginia plantation only a few miles from Monticello, and the pair went on to forge a Vibbs large-esque, I like to say that, relationship while working together in the White House. I'd like to think that I'm Thomas Jefferson. I'd like to think you're Meriwether Lewis. Are you cool with
that?
I'll
take that in a second.
In a heartbeat,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not embarrassing.
No, Thomas Jefferson, great head of hair, a little ponytail.
Yeah,
but
that hurts.
He was too cultured for me. I'm more of a hey, let's light a fire and drink some beer, boys.
100%.
Yeah.
I want to see the other side of the United States. I don't want to go.
You would love to go.
I would love if you said, "Hey, Large, I'll go." And I'll tell you all about it.
Yes.
But done.
Meanwhile, you're taking shits with people in French hallways. Done. That's what Thomas Jefferson loved.
Exactly what I want to do. Yeah. Slave owner, too.
Yes.
Everyone,
yeah.
Everyone knows that. Not saying that I'm more slave owner-ish of the two of us. Just dropping that as an aside. But I'm Thomas Jefferson. You're Meriwether Lewis. I'm going to say John is William Clark. I got to give John something. Okay? So.
That's fair.
The total so. When Jefferson,
Anne is Sacagawea.
100% Sacagawea. Yeah, 100%.
Do you ever get those Sacagawea gold coins?
I have a bunch.
Oh, they were the best. I was
they
kidding.
Were greatest, right?
I remember paying for a terrarium with like six Sacagawea gold coins when I was like eight.
It said that Sacagawea has more statues built in her honor than any other American woman. That's pretty cool. I mean, that's just like a little thing, and I guess there's no way to know if it's true or not. Maybe there's a couple of Tubmans laying around nobody knows about. But Sacagawea is supposed to be number one with the bullet as far as having statues dedicated
right.
to her.
Right. Basically saved these two and had a baby the whole time on her back.
100%.
Think about that for a second.
Uh-huh.
Imagine giving birth and taking this baby on a
we
mission
can't.
Like
to,
that,
to stick.
You're the only one here with any kind of
perspective. Well, to stick with
this.
The moon... what is it? The moon.
The moon
thing. Like, no, these guys are going to the moon. Imagine, imagine going to the moon and having a baby, and you
Seriously,
have no doctors
right?
and stuff. Yeah, it's the same.
Right. With modern medicine. I mean, when you go to the moon,
metaphor. That's what I was
looking for. When you go to the moon and have a baby, somebody can still boil water and get some clean sheets. They're cutting fucking umbilical cords with sharp rocks.
And if you
right?
think about it, she kind of orchestrated this wonderful real estate purchase.
I'm gonna give her her due. I swear
no,
to God,
I know you do.
Sacagawea will get her
I
due.
Refuse to believe that it wasn't the men on this trip that did
it. She's the ultimate badass, if you think of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, she was the shit. So when Jefferson decided to launch this expedition all the way to the West in 1802, he immediately named Lewis, just like I would name Vibbs, as its commander. And then Lewis, Vibbs, immediately chose his close friend and very handsome William Clark, Johnny LBI, Johnny San Diego. Right? Johnny San Diego to be his second in command. So the total expedition party included 45 people. That's including Lewis and Clark, 27 unmarried soldiers, a French Indian interpreter, a contracted boat crew, and a slave. They had one slave with them. So William Clark had a slave, a personal slave, and he was a big black guy named York. And he came along with them. Sacagawea was not part of the expedition when it started. And that's probably news to a lot of people. So when they left... St. Louis in 1803, Sacagawea was not on board. Here's another left turn. To prepare for the trip in early 1803, Thomas Jefferson sent Meriwether Lewis to Philadelphia under the tutelage of a gentleman named Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Rush was a stud. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He was a respected physician in Philadelphia. And Rush taught Lewis about frontier illnesses and the performance of bloodletting. And Rush ultimately provided the Corps with a medical kit that included the following things. I said Benjamin Rush was a stud. I'm going to take that back. Benjamin Rush was a very popular figure. He was a founding father and whatnot. But I'm going to get to the bottom of Benjamin Rush right now. So everybody who was going on the Lewis and Clark expedition had a pack from Benjamin Rush. Mm-hmm. Inside that pack, you had Turkish opium for nervousness. That was their 3G.
I'm on this trip already.
Boom.
I'm ready.
Boom. Yeah. That's great. We could just smoke opium all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking great.
Just go down the river smoking opium. That sounds like a blast.
100%.
Sounds like a vacation.
Emetics. You had emetics to induce vomiting. you had medicinal wine. We spoke about medicinal wine. A pope one time had was on a fucking ad for medicinal wine. So I'm smoking opium. I'm don't have to do the finger sandwiches to throw up. I could take some emetics. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking medicinal wine. And finally, he gave every, so a total of 50 dozen, I think that's 600, of Dr. Rush's bilious pills were sent with the expedition. So 600 of these pills. They were laxatives. These laxatives contain three main ingredients. One of them was something called jalap. Jalap is an herbal laxative taken from the roots of a Mexican climbing plant. Okay, a laxative has jalap in it. Jalap is a natural laxative. Mm-hmm. The second ingredient was chlorine. Yikes. The third ingredient, which made up 50% of each one of these pills, was something called mercury. Mercury is no bueno. Right? You have too much tuna at the sushi place and you could fucking die. Some lady almost died from having too much sushi at a buffet this week. The pills were commonly known as thunderclappers because they brought the thunder to your asshole.
I'm pretty sure there was a point where Dave Portnoy got mercury poisoning because he was eating sushi every single day.
Yep.
And then his eye like swelled up.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Mercury poisoning is a big deal.
Yeah.
These guys had 600 pills, half of the pills. And each one of the pills, 50% of them were, each pill was 50% mercury, 25% chlorine, and 25% of Mexican laxative.
None of that.
That's crazy.
It is good.
It's 100% crazy. So the explorers had like a meat-rich diet, and they had a lack of clean water during the expedition. That's what they expected, and that was going to cause constipation. And Rush, Benjamin Rush, Dr. Benjamin Rush, was a huge proponent of something back then called heroic medicine. Heroic medicine is also referred to as heroic depletion theory. It was a therapeutic method advocating for rigorous treatment of bloodletting, purging, and sweating to shock the body back to health after any type of illness caused an imbalance, a humoral imbalance, an imbalance of your humors. So Dr. Rush's answer to everything was out with the bad, right? And then modern medicine gave us more of an in with the good, right? Antibiotics and all this stuff.
Right.
So his answer to just about anything was, let me open up a vein,
Yeah. Get
some blood out of you, and that'll bring your humors, your chakras back in the thing.
Don't worry, we'll shock your body back into health.
Yeah, so... blankets dipped in vinegar, then put into a steam room. That was his thing. Emetics, throwing up, laxatives, shitting yourself, blood, anything that would take stuff out. That's called heroic medicine.
That's horrible, right? It's horrible. That's all that regeneration.
Yeah, heroic depletion theory. You just take shit out with the bed. Okay? Rush wrote that constipation is often a sign of approaching disease. So whenever one of these guys felt constipated, they should avoid disease and take one or more of my purging pills. That's what they wanted to do. And they worked. Not only did they clean the explorers out, their high mercury content providing an excellent tracer by which archaeologists have been able to track the core's actual route to the Pacific by measuring the spiked levels of mercury in the latrine pits they used along the way. I'll say that again, and a lot of people know this because they've mentioned it before on this show. Their shit was so toxic with mercury that it was easily traceable. Like almost anybody with a Geiger, it was easily traceable 200 years later. So we were able to map out the exact route of Lewis and Clark because it wasn't like hang a left at the oak tree. There's no way to do it like, you know, Andy's letter to Red, you know, like that whole thing. The only way that they were able to make a true map outside of the journals was to go around and measure mercury levels, and they found toxic latrine pits 200 years later. That's fantastic. Right?
Imagine being on that expedition.
Yeah.
So now you're just following the latrine pits of Lewis and Clark, just digging up shit.
That's
a weird expedition.
Yeah, it's not sexy.
And that's like your life work. That's
I could go on that one.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
it's less dangerous. Like, yeah. I would do that.
Oh, I do.
You'd
I
be
would
Jefferson,
do
I'd be Lewis.
I'd do that in a second.
Again, these mercury pills were invented by Benjamin Rush, a guy who signed a declaration, but a guy that existed in a time in the late 1700s where people had some fucking wacky ideas about science and medicine. I'm going to talk about him for a little while. I did a left turn on Louis XIV, a small left turn on Benjamin Rush. He was the medical consultant for the Lewis and Clark Expedition, founding father, signed the Declaration way before it was stolen by Nick Cage, right? Mm-hmm. He was a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, Ivy League school, and he went on to found Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Have you ever heard of Dickinson College?
I've not.
Let me tell you who the most notable alumnus of Dickinson College is. Number one with a bullet is James Buchanan. James Buchanan was the 15th president of the United States. He was the only president to be elected from Pennsylvania, and he was the only president to remain a lifelong bachelor. Buchanan, Dickinson College, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, founded by Dr. Benjamin Rush. Let me tell you about a couple other notable alumnus. Beck, guy who sang Loser, I'm a loser, baby. Antonio Banderas.
Wow.
Yeah, and finally, I think everybody's favorite lesbian since Ellen had like that little hiccup, Rosie O'Donnell. Rosie O'Donnell is also a Dickinson College. And now think about that. She's a lesbian, but she went to Dickens, right? Like Dick is in.
Why was Buchanan single?
I don't know. Oh, no, not a gay guy. I don't think so.
Because when you're the president, and you're pulling in presidential pussy, you're
are you kidding me?
That's the biggest mistake. That's the biggest mistake all these presidents have made, going 100%. In with a first lady.
Yeah.
You got to go
like
in
you
single.
You said earlier, all these men went on this expedition. They were unmarried men. Of course they are, as they should be.
Yeah, your wife's going to have a problem if you're going to disappear into the wilderness for 3 years and not write her back.
Mm. That's right. Exactly.
I love the fact that when we do this in real time, I just got a picture of a six-pack of Saranac Black Cherry Cream Soda. Mm-hmm. I know this is the inside of my refrigerator.
Chunky car right now?
And that's from Finnegan. Can I take one for the road?
Oh, did he just send that?
Yeah, I just sent back a text to him. Yes, sir, and a thank you.
That is so funny. Antonio Banderas thing is blowing my mind a little bit. Yeah, I know. He's a little bit more cultured.
It's weird because James Buchanan went there. Sure, that's cool. Beck went there. Who gives a shit? Rosie O'Donnell? Makes sense. Rosie O'Donnell seems to be like she's a yinzer. Like, you know, like somebody from like Pennsylvania or something. Antonio Banderas?
Yeah, I was expecting him to have graduated from someplace like, you know, if you said Coastal Carolina, where it's like nobody in bikinis.
Antonio Banderas, I didn't even think he went to college. He's just exotic and he knows.
Windsurfing in Panama.
The wind told
him. Yeah, yeah. Yo, the break of the waves taught me how to fucking live.
I got to put a pin in that. I researched a lot of this bullshit just to make sure. I got to put a pin in whether or not Antonio Banderas really graduated. Might have been one of those honorary degrees where he got to do the commencement speech or something like that. So they gave him an honorary degree in like food services, which is a noble cause.
I didn't look up.
Antonio Banderas.
Oh, never mind.
No, come back to me. So the reason that I mention this, please, Benjamin Rush, who invented these poison pills and all this stuff, didn't poison anybody, but they were poisonous going down the road. Had started this college. He was a leader of the American Enlightenment. And the American Enlightenment, which basically brought about the American Revolution, right? So people all of a sudden becoming enlightened to what they were, all of a sudden made people want to break free from England, and that was the American Revolution. He opposed slavery, slavery bad. He advocated free public schools, education good, and he sought improved education for women and a more enlightened penal system. So he wanted some rights for prisoners, rights for women, rights for blacks, and he wanted kids to get educated for free. So the guy had a lot. He was also recognized as the father of American psychiatry. In 1965, 150 years after his death, the American Psychiatric Association actually named him the father of American psychiatry. So he did a lot of good. But here are the not-so-positives. He made laxatives with mercury. Right? That wasn't great. In 1792, he read a paper before the American Philosophical Society where he argued that the color and figure of blacks were, and this is a quote, of blacks were derived from a form of leprosy. He argued with proper treatment, blacks could be cured and become white. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
He advocated bloodletting for almost any illness, and he used other early heroic medical techniques that often were ineffective and actually brought many patients closer to their deathbed, so much so that some even blamed Rush's bleeding and bloodletting for hastening the death of a couple of guys you've heard of, Ben Franklin, George Washington, and Rush himself, who insisted upon being bled shortly before his death when he was only 67 years old. And we did a little bit of turn on George Washington once. And we know that one of the reasons George Washington had died is I think he gave like 40 quarts of blood in the last 3 days of his fucking life. Mm-hmm. So Benjamin Rush was at the forefront of bloodletting. And they said he probably killed more patients than he healed. So there we go.
Not ideal.
Benjamin Rush did some great stuff, but Benjamin Rush was also crazier than a shit-out rap.
Who's the coach? Jeff Fisher, who has like a 500 record. He's like the Jeff Fisher of medicine.
He's the Jeff Fisher. He's got more of the founding fathers.
He's got about
signed a declaration.
Yeah, I mean
it had to be something.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Fisher's a respectable guy, but I mean, 100%. he's got about the same amount of losses as wins.
No joke, I think I might have a Cane's sauce problem. I was at Raising Cane's the other day getting my box combo with extra sauce on the side like usual. I have an order. When I eat my Cane's, it goes crinkle cut fries, chicken fingers, the Texas toast, and finish strong with the slaw. So I start eating, and before I know it, I'm scraping the bottom of my sauce, and I wasn't even done with my fries yet. This habit is escalating, and I'm 100% here for it. Dip into Cane's. Get extra sauce for me, please.
Whether you're tossing the ball around with buddies or picking off passes like a pro, Optimum Nutrition can help unlock more you. Tackle your recovery with Gold Standard 100% Whey, which has 24 grams of high-quality protein per serving and more than 15 delicious, easy-to-mix flavors. Put the world's number one to the test. Available at stores nationwide and online at OptimumNutrition.com. Euromonitor International Limited, Consumer Health 2023 Edition, and custom research conducted February to March 2023. Retail sales of whey protein powder in 2022.
I like wearing a loose tank top. Yeah. Every now and again, a tit falls out or something like that. We're back to the Lewis and Clark expedition. With thunder clappers in hand, with pills filled with mercury that's going to make you shit your pants in hand, on May 14th, 1804, the 45 members of the Corps of Discovery, I like that name, as opposed to Lewis and Clark expedition, the Corps of Discovery, they embarked from Camp Dubois, just outside of St. Louis, Missouri, to begin the westward journey up the Missouri River. Here's a quick creepy fact. William Clark, the part of, you know, Lewis and Clark, his fiance had said before they left in 1804 that she was going to wait for him, It's not as, and she did get married when he got back. Yeah. She didn't know when he was coming back.
Right.
And she was going to wait for him. That's a big deal.
That's love.
It's not as big of a deal. I think she was only 12 years old. It's fucking creepy.
She didn't know any better.
He was 20 years older than her. So you can check the dates on that, but I think his fiance was 12 years
old. Damn. Hang on. So he was
gone
3 years. So she was 15 when he got back. That's almost.
I think they got married when she was like 17.
In Indiana, that's fine.
100%. Yep. That's cool, right?
Yeah.
Around wherever. On August 20th, I'm going to give you a couple of highlights of their journey, right? It's a long journey. I'm just going to go through a couple of them. On August 20th, 1804, Sergeant Charles Floyd, you haven't heard his name before, he was the youngest man in the expedition. They took off on May 14th. On August 20th, so May, June, July, and it's August. So 4 months into it, Sergeant Charles Floyd, the youngest man on the expedition, died of a ruptured appendix near modern-day Sioux City, Iowa. So they made it to Iowa before somebody died. This is a wild thing. Incredibly, Floyd is the only death to anybody in the expedition in the 2+ years. That's wild. 45 men come, 45 men leave, and 44 return. Bravo.
I expect half to die. I'd be like, oh, that's solid.
I'd die.
Yeah.
I would be dead.
There's
three of us in this room. Two of us would make it.
They weren't distracted.
There is nothing out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they know how to like forage and find food, but there's just nothing out there. It's just them on their own. And one person died.
Plus, they wanted notoriety. Like, they wanted to be able to come back and talk about it. I have to imagine that held some weight in a bar.
Breaking news.
What?
In May 2010, Antonio Banderas received an honorary doctorate from the University of Malaga, which I believe is in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Antonio Banderas getting an honorary doctorate from the University of Malaga not only makes sense, it's fucking sexy. He's a sexy
Spanish
doctor. He didn't
learn to speak English until his role in the Mambo Kings.
That's 2010 he got his doctorate. Yeah. But in 2000, he received an honorary degree from Dickinson College. That's true. Twisted history gives you the truth. We spit it at you.
In 2009, he had a benign tumor removed from his back.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, what a scare.
Yeah.
Right?
Gross.
So we're 4 months into it. We lose our first guy. That guy winds up being the only guy that we lose. Okay? That's August 20th, 1804. On November 11th, 1804, while constructing a fort in North Dakota, this is an important thing, they were among the hospitable Mandan and Hitatsa Indians, and they met this young broad named Sacagawea. She was 17 years old, and she was the pregnant wife of Toussaint Charbonneau, a French-Canadian trader hired by Lewis and Clark as a Hidatsa interpreter. So they didn't go after Sacagawea. They went after this guy, Toussaint Charbonneau. Toussaint happened to have a 17-year-old knocked-up squaw.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he had. Sacagawea was originally a Shoshone Indian who had been kidnapped by the Hidatsa at the age of 12 and then sold to this guy, Charbonneau. Excuse me. Lewis and Clark hoped that she could help them communicate with any Shoshone they'd encounter on their journey. So they were like, we're taking her with us. We're taking this pregnant bitch with us because even though she's with the Hitatsu or whatever, we know we're going to have to deal with the Shoshone. So we want her to come with us. As a guide, as an interpreter, and as a forager, she proved to be an invaluable member of the expedition. So remember the fact that she was Shoshone, because that's the reason that she was taken along.
So Toussaint was just like, you know, this sounds great. I'd love to. A little dangerous. Yeah. So I'm going to send this 17-year-old pregnant girl.
Who's pregnant with my kid.
With my kid, yeah.
February 11th, 1805. So we started off in May of 1804. On February 11th of 1805, 3 months to the day after she joined the party, Sacagawea gave birth to a son, and she named him Jean-Baptiste, and the explorers nicknamed him Pomp. They used to call him Pomp or Pompey. William Clark was very fond of this kid. Mm-hmm. I didn't write this down, but after everybody gets through it, you know he survives because I told you that. William Clark wound up adopting Pompey after Sacagawea had passed away. He supported the kid and then wound up adopting him after Sacagawea. So William Clark did that.
Did he adopt this kid with his 12-year-old bride?
Yeah. Pomp was older than his wife.
Yeah.
On August 8th, 1805, the boys make it to the Shoshone people along the border of modern-day Montana and Idaho. And Lewis and Clark now believe the fate of the expedition hangs on finding the Shoshone and buying horses from them. It's the only way the Corps can hope to cross the Rocky Mountains, before winter. So a lot of this was, we take our canoes upstream or downstream. When we trek across land, we're dragging canoes.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to a point where they got to go through the Rocky Mountains. They need horses. They couldn't have had horses that survived with them since St. Louis. So when they get to like this Montana area that's ruled by the Shoshone Indians, they need to get horses from the Shoshone in order to make it over the Rocky Mountains, and that will then give them, boom, their last little leg down to the Pacific Ocean.
I believe they used keel boats for the first part of it.
Keel boats, absolutely.
A little bigger.
100%. So if they have to talk to Shoshones and haggle to get horses, who better to do it than with Sacagawea,
mm-hmm.
who's a full-blown Shoshone. So this is how it goes down. They go into the Shoshone camp. This is how I'm recreating it. It's not actually how it goes down. So they go into the Shoshone camp, and they bring Sacagawea, and they're like, all right, now don't fuck this up. We need horses. Do you know these people? She's like, I think I know these people. It's been a while. It's been 5 years since I've been kidnapped and all this stuff, but you know, I should know these people. I don't know what's been going on. I've been keeping in touch. There was no Facebook.
Yeah.
So they go in there and they're like, don't fuck this up. Get us some horses. Sacagawea goes in. They say, take me to your leader, the Shoshone. So they say, okay. So they go. She meets the chief of the tribe. The chief of the tribe turns around and says, Sacagawea? And she says, Bob? It was her brother. How fucked up is that?
Yep.
So now Sacagawea and her brother, boom, sells them the horses, no fucking problem. She's worth her weight in gold, this bitch. I love Sacagawea. And the guy's name wasn't Bob, obviously, but that's how it went down, basically. So now the guys have the horses, and they can make it over the Rocky Mountains. Still a pain in the balls.
Oh, yeah. But they're so glad they called Sacagawea.
100%.
Imagine Toussaint trying to get that.
Yeah.
Oh, so, hey, I knocked up your sister. Can we get some horses?
Yeah. That was August 8th. By November 24th, they finally reached the Pacific coast just in time to hunker down in winter quarters before turning around and heading home, which I mentioned before. All right, we're at the Pacific. Oh, awesome. What are we going to do? Get some sleep. We got to go home.
It's kind of like the Free Solo or the Alpinist documentary.
100%.
Like, they climb the mountain. Then they have to go back down.
They don't
show that
it
part.
Sucks. Yeah. The only thing is that they made relationships along the way. So even through like the leanest parts of their voyage or their expedition, they knew that there were friendly Indian tribes. Like there was one Indian tribe that fed them so much, they all got sick. just because they were just gobbling down food like fucking turkeys.
Was this the salmon when they ate
no,
salmon?
No, 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 not the salmon because it had sand in it. That's why they went to the dogs. I'm going to close on that.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead.
All right, no.
Oh, we'll talk about it then.
On Lowering the Bar, we tried horse meat chips.
Yes.
And
they were lovely.
I brought this up on the episode. Lewis and Clark ate their horses and their dogs. Mm-hmm. That was what we talked about.
Yeah.
Because they liked the red meat more than the salmon. Like the salmon was just kind of
Well, no, because the salmon wasn't fresh.
Oh.
What they did was is that they were given dried salmon. It's essentially so,
jerky?
Yeah, it was essentially jerky.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of this jerky was preserved in sand. So it had like a gritty type thing to it too that didn't agree with them either.
Right.
So there was more thing like, oh, what a bunch of prissy guys that they weren't enjoying fresh salmon steak. Like I could take a salmon steak and a stick.
Mm-hmm.
All I need is a little bit of lemon. I can make someone knock your fucking eye out.
Right.
But, you know, if it's like dirty salmon jerky, I might eat a dog too. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. So on July 25th, 1806, so on the way home, they turned around in November. On July 25th, 1806, Clark etches his name and the date into a sandstone outcropping near modern-day Billings, Montana. And he names that outcropping Pompey's Tower after Sacagawea's son. It remains the only physical, other than their toxic shit, it remains the only physical evidence of Lewis and Clark's expedition that survives today. So we have, you know, we don't have any pictures. We have journals.
Mm-hmm.
We have journals. We have toxic shit. But as far as anything that they left their mark on the land, the only thing that's left today, over 200 years later, is when Clark decided just to take time to etch his name into what he wound up calling Pompey's Tower somewhere in Billings, Montana. That's pretty cool.
Shows you the quality of person, right?
Yeah.
Because they could have done it everywhere they went. They could have left their mark and left a trail and scratched into rocks, but they didn't deface anything except they made their one mark.
100%.
He probably thought about it the whole trip, where he was going to do it too.
Yeah, and all of the forts that they built along the way were torn down and refortified. So it's not like there's an original, you know, hut made from them. So it's kind of cool that the only thing is an etching. So that next day, so that was Clark that did that little etching. That next day, Lewis catches a small group of Blackfeet Indians trying to steal their guns and horses, and he kills one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis kills a young brave. That was the only native death on the whole expedition. Somebody said that there's another incident where another native had died. There's either one or two Indians. I'm going to go with this story that only one died in that incident. So we're going to talk about the fact these guys were gone for nearly 3 years, what they'd gone through. They only lost one member of the expedition party, and they only killed one Indian along the way.
Was this because his dog was stolen?
No, you know, so the dog.
There's
and I'm
rumors
get
about
to,
that. Yeah,
yeah, so the dog was stolen. He sent like a 4-man team to go get him.
Mm-hmm.
Sent it, yeah, so it was big time.
John Wick before John Wick.
I was just going to say that. Look what John Wick did. And you can imagine what this guy did.
On September 23rd, 1806, the Corps of Discovery arrived back in St. Louis, and they were exhausted explorers and greeted as heroes. So they started in Missouri. They entered Kansas. They headed due north along the eastern border of Nebraska, then directly through the heart of South Dakota and North Dakota before hanging a hard left and cutting across Montana. They went through the northern tip of Idaho, and then straddled the Washington-Oregon border until they hit the Pacific. And they did it in 2.5 years. And they did it in the early 1800s. And they did it with only losing one man to a burst appendix and killing only one Native American. That's extraordinary. That's extraordinary history. And that's the reason why we're talking about it today.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's extraordinary history. And the Native American people weren't all unfriendly. I don't mean to say that every time they went in there, it was like a Last of the Mohicans type thing. Some of them were quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Some of them offered up their wives as sexual tributes, a thing that I would never do. The tribes of the High Plains believed that spiritual power passed between people during the act of banging. So by sharing their wives, they could appropriate the power of the person being banged. And nobody seems to have more power than a white man back then, with his guns, his ability to work metal, his technological prowess. One member of the Corps of Discovery was offered 4 Mandan women in a single night. They just want your power, Phipps. They just want your I could
That's
do
a women weaken the legs. Yeah, I don't want them sucking my soul out.
Clark's black slave, York. Imagine that. This big black guy was even more magical. They never saw a black guy in their lives. So this guy was
they
fucking magical.
The women were like, I want his power.
Yeah. So York was swimming in indigenous pussy.
Yeah.
He was killing it. Absolutely killing it. Oh, it's Tomahawk.
For York.
Yeah, York. Look, by the way, at one point, I'm going to mention this too. They came to a fork in the road. And this was like an official government expedition. They came to a fork in the road, and they were deciding which way to go. And they like had it. They took a vote between everybody.
Right.
And York and Sacagawea were both given a vote. It was like the first time an indigenous person and a black man was given the right to vote in anything that had anything to do with the government thing. Like, that's kind of cool, too. York was killing it with Indian women.
Yeah.
I mean, slaying it two at a time.
Yeah.
Like, just imagine it. You know what I'm saying? And then Sacagawea was Sacagawea, right? So we made a bunch of fucking statues about it. I said there were 45 members of the expedition, but there was actually one more, and his name was Seaman, which is why I mentioned they never ate Seaman. Seaman was a Newfoundland. They're big. Newfies are big. Big dogs. They're considered one of the most traveled, and Seaman himself is considered one of the most traveled dogs in human history. Seaman was purchased in 1803 specifically for the expedition by Captain Lewis while he was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He chose a Newfoundland whose estimated weight is 150 pounds because they do well on boats, they're good swimmers, and they can assist in water rescues, ergo the name Seaman, right? He was a water dog. So a modern commenter on the expedition remarked that Lewis seems to have been happiest, when he was alone on shore with his gun, with his notebook, and with his dog.
Hell yeah, brother. Right? That's a man's
ice cold beer, my dog. And my dark gun. Do I have my dark gun on me? Oh, no, I left it on my desk.
That's like you and your tweets, Vibs.
Yeah, you and
your
tweets.
Your dogs.
Yeah.
Your laptop is your...
Yeah.
That's all I want to do is just...
The gun
just
is hidden off to the side.
Sit with my dogs and just drink a coffee.
Seaman's the reason I brought this whole fucking thing up. The reason that they survived was because they ate over 200 dogs. The Indians our boys encountered along the way ate dogs, and so did members of the expedition when nothing else was available. Particularly in the dry areas of what is now eastern Washington, where there was little, if any, game, and the only other choice was dried salmon.
Gotcha.
Dried and preserved salmon, and the men came to prefer dog instead. And I don't mean to make too much of it, because their favorite food would have been elk. They ate a lot of beaver tail, which I like saying out loud. They ate a lot of buffalo, but dogs would do if dogs were all they could get. Only William Clark was the only guy to abstain. He was the guy who never, he couldn't bring himself to eat dog meat. But as I mentioned before, he had no problems marrying a 15-year-old girl, right?
Everyone's got weird morals. You know what I mean? It's
I won't
different.
Eat dog, but I have a 12-year-old fiance. Yeah. I don't know. So my point is, and this is how I'm going to end this podcast right now. My point is that during a trip over hostile and uncharted land, the members of Lewis and Clark expedition had to do many things to stay alive. Sometimes they had to have sex with multiple indigenous women in one night. Takes your legs from you. Sometimes they had to eat dog. Sometimes they had to eat horse. But there's one thing you could say for sure is that they never eat semen. Right? And that's pretty commendable. Unless, of course, that's what you like to do. That's it for the Twisted History of Lewis and Clark. Thank you, Vibs, as always. Thank you, Annie, for everything that you do. John, big thank you to the Voice of God, and we'll see you guys next week. One final addendum before we go. I know I've mentioned it a couple of times. We're still trying to do this 2 cents thing. So 2 cents is a different platform where you can listen to podcasts. I don't have any skin in the game with 2 cents. I don't. It's not anything that Barstool owns or anything like that. It's just something where we can actually hear people's ideas of what they think about the podcast and what they want to hear. Like, I just did this whole podcast on when a guy sent me an email saying that they ate 200 dogs.
Right.
That's how it happened.
Feedback is huge. It's essential.
So, www.2cents.audio/twisted. www.2cents.audio/twisted. And it's one of these things that's in beta. We're just kind of fucking around with it.
Yeah.
So the more we use it, the better it'll get. And it'll be a good way for us to get feedback. That's all we want. We want feedback. I think this should be more of an interact. I think sometimes the comment sections are better than the blogs on Barstool Sports, right? Like, yeah. Yeah, sometimes are. And so that's what this is essentially trying to become. So again, www.2cents.audio/twisted. All right, so that's it. That's the twisted history of Lewis and Clark. Thank you so much, Annie. Thank you so much, John. Thank you so much, Vibsy. And we'll see you guys all next week on Twisted History.